QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net at 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330, offset of 600 kilohertz and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Nothing heard, and that's a good thing. Are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. Alrighty, hearing none out there. One announcement to be made, as our test session for ham radio amateurs was canceled this last Sunday by looming weather conditions. We're working on trying to get a makeup session, if we can get the fire department room again, to possibly happen this Sunday. So I'll let more information on that later. So the topics for this evening, I think we'll expand a little bit on what Mike had last week with Yaggies and possibly get into the effect of adding either more elements or more antennas, or both, and what that does. So anyway, and we'll kind of toss that around this evening. So I'm going to get to the roster here and break 1 second. Alrighty, and if you're not on the roster, we haven't updated this thing yet, so kind of been in a midst of turmoil here in the last few weeks, but back out here, so we'll get you on here. WB6CLZ Mike in Placentia, are you out there?
Certainly are, Tom. Wouldn't miss it for the world. It's WB6CLZ still down in Placentia.
All righty. How about your sidekick, or XYL, I should say, WB6CIN?
WB6CIN here.
All right, Cindy, glad you could be out there and listening in this evening. How about KA6CIA George in Lucerne Valley?
Yeah, I'm still listening, KA6CIA.
Hi, George, glad to have you with us. Glad to see you didn't get blown away in all that wind. Alrighty, I don't know if he's up in Sugarloaf or out there in Echo Link, but we'll give him a little break for KE6RJ and KE6QI. If they're on Echo Link, we'll give him a few seconds. I don't hear him out there. How about KJ6FEX, Alan in Corona? Are you out there this evening? Now, nothing heard. How about AF6ZJ, Zebra Jockey? Guy out there in Rosemont, are you listening? And nothing heard. KI6SKN, Chris, are you out there? And this is KF6Q with Tech Tuesday Net on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. Nothing heard there. How about KJ6HZS, Mike, in Funskin?
Oh, welcome back, Tom. This is KJ6HZS. Can't wait to hear tonight's topic. Back to you. Glad you're back. Hopefully your move is through.
We're very close to being through, but I think we get some fair weather here. We'll be wrapping it up here. Anyway, we're on here tonight, so that's all that matters right now. So, how about KJ6FIL, Mike in Redlands? Are you out there this evening?
I sure am, just about like every week. KJ6FIL, back to you.
Okay, Mike, glad to hear you out there. Hope everything's working out there. Last time, that was a while back. Hope you got your antenna all squared away. All righty, let's see here. Oop, hang on one second. All righty, there we go. Radio fell on the floor. Sorry about that. Let's see here. How about KJ6, KDL Jim in Sugarloaf?
Roger, KJ6 KDL here at KJ6 KDK.
Alrighty, we got you both there. And we'll put a little stab out there at W6 MRK. Mark in Antigua, are you out there in Echo Link? Yeah, nothing heard. How about KJ6 DBQ Peggy, Big Bear City?
Hello, Tom and the group. This is Peggy, KJ6DBQ. Looking forward to tonight's topic also.
All righty, good. Glad to hear you out there, Peggy. How about W6GZI? Frank, are you out there? Yeah, nothing heard. KI6IQA, Kelly, probably over at the stove.
Good evening, gents. KI6IQA.
All righty, Elf Cooker. New nickname. Glad to have you out there, Kelly. How about K6GVL Ron in Green Valley? Are you out there? And nothing heard. AD6PL Harold in Riverside.
Good evening, AD6PL.
Hey, good evening, Harold. Glad to have you out there. KJ6RAY Ray, are you out there? And nothing heard. How about W6AWL Art in Sun City or Sugarloaf? I'm not sure where. You might be down there with cert swear in there. Alrighty, and we know W6JLM's probably not back up here, or KMM, but we'll give them a stab real quick. One chance. Alrighty, nothing heard. KI6OHN, John, Big Bear City, are you out there? And nothing heard. How about W6KVC, Gary? And nothing heard. KD6LN, Bill, Boulder Bay.
Sorry, you caught me with my mouth full. KD6LN.
You got to get that foot out of that mouth. You'll talk better. I mean, whatever you got in there. Swallow. All right, Bill. All righty, we got K6HAL, Rudy. And nothing heard. How about W6PBZ Ray? Hey, maybe he's out there now. And nothing heard. How about KJ6BCK Adam in Garden Grove? And nothing heard. KE6VHM Frank. And nothing heard. How about KA6ROD, Rod? Rod, you listening in?
Sure am. Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD.
All right, Rod. Glad to have you out there. How about KJ6DBS Leon? And nothing heard. KB6LCY Christy in Apple Valley. And nothing heard there. And that'll conclude my list as I have it right now. Is there anybody else who would like to check in? Just come on back right now to KF6Q.
NQ7RD, Rick in Corona.
WA6FIZ, Mickey in Upper Moon Ridge.
All right, Rick in Corona. Sorry, I had you on my write-in sheet there, and I... I've got it buried underneath. You don't even want to see my radio room. And Mickey, glad to hear you out there. All right, anybody else? Please come back.
Hey, we might have doubled, Tom. KE6FQC, Big Bear City.
KE6FQC, hey, Steve, glad to have you with us this evening. Anybody else?
In Sky Valley, here's Chris, K6YW.
All right, Chris, glad to have you out there. Yeah, you're another one I have on my other sheet and didn't make it to the computer yet. Sorry about that. Anybody else?
Listening in.
All righty, anybody else? All righty. Well, Mike, WB6CLZ, what do we got cooking out there for DX sunspots, solar waves, solar flares, solar everything? What's going on?
Hey, Tom, this is WB6CLZ. Well, no solar flares. We're good about that. Sunspot cycle is getting up there, though. We're starting to get into cycle 24, and things are looking good. Space Weather today is reporting a sunspot count of 103. It's been bouncing up and down. Was pretty close to 100. I think it was 132 a couple days ago. Been up and down, so pretty good, though. Things are looking pretty good. We worked the CQWPX sideband DX contest over the weekend, and things were great. I mean, I worked stations in Spain, Russia, Australia, Colombia, Brazil, Cayman Islands, Chile, New Zealand, Japan, Uruguay, Argentina, Dominican Republic, and those are just the notable ones. So, I mean, it was a very, very good weekend for HF propagation. You know, there's some hope for cycle 24, and things are looking good. Comment?
Yeah, go ahead. I think comment. I think that was Chris. Go ahead.
Yes, I was listening on the Monument Peak last night. And one of the guys said he was in 17 meters, and he said it didn't matter where, South America, Asia, Europe, they were all just coming in great. K6YW.
Hey, Chris, that's great. Did he mention what he was using as far as power or antenna or anything like that, or is that an unknown?
No, and I got near the end of the conversation. K6YW.
All right, well, it sounds like things are picking up. That's a good thing. So, and it's just going to get better and better. So, well, anyway, this evening we're going to kind of just carry on a little bit with last week's topic of Yagis and what we can do with them, how we can stack them and make them bigger and smaller and well, more elements or less. Anyway, Mike, want to just do a real quick summary from what you recall from last week, and we'll just take it from there.
Hey, Tom, KF6QWB6CLZ for ID. Well, basically, we were talking about Yagi antennas, about basically what they are and how they work. And as everybody can recall, basically a Yagi antenna, it focuses the signal. And that's really how we get the gain. If you think of it as a balloon and kind of squash it out, makes an elliptical pattern, that's basically what the pattern of a pattern of a Yagi looks like. And the way that we get gain out of a Yagi is that we, you know, we have on the sides, we have very little gain. And on the back, front-to-back ratio, we have little gain in the backside, but where it's actually pointing down the throat of the station you're talking to, that's how we get the gain. I'll let you take it from there, Tom. Go ahead.
Okay, Roger that. You know, and we're in, I think we're going to stick with the 2-meter and VHF, UHF antennas right now. Obviously, as you get into the HF bands, a Yagi antenna or a beam, as they used to call it back in the olden days, you're not going to have seven or eight elements out there If you do, you're going to probably have about 2 acres of property to turn the thing around in, if you're on 40 meters, that is, or something even bigger than that. So, but anyway, for the 2 meters, let's just focus on that. And this is a 2 meter net, so that's kind of going to apply pretty good there. Mike, I would say the minimum on a Yagi is one reflector and one driven element. That's two pieces of metal. Otherwise, it's simply a dipole. So that's the beginning, correct?
That's the beginning, director, driven element, and then we add reflectors, and then we go from there.
Yeah, roger that. Almost every Yagi has got the main element, which is going to be the driven element. Now, some actually have more, but we're going to stick with the single driven element, and that would be the ones that the wires are going to from the radio. Your reflector, which is usually bigger and is for that purpose, is to create a shield from behind you. That would be the first step towards a Yagi and making it a little more directional. You're going to cancel out a lot of the signals coming from one direction and leave the other ones pretty much wide open. Now, as we add other elements in front, of course, they are shorter. They are not shorter to let the other wavelengths go over the top of them. That is not how that works. They actually are shorter as they go to the front. They are capturing a different phase of the signal coming in. And that gets rather complicated. We will probably have that on the website. Hopefully the website will be up and running. I have to really apologize for that. I've been involved with this move, so I haven't been able to get too busy on that. Let me reset. Well, anyway, Mike, rule of thumb, basically, what is it? You can add 5% to your driven element, and there's your reflector, and subtract 5%, and there's your first director, and put them about 2/10 of a wavelength apart, and you could actually build a Yagi with no bookwork, and it would work. You did some research last week on some of the brands. Who are the big makers and shakers out there making Yagis right now?
Probably the best well-known brand is Cushcraft. They've got quite a selection. They've got their boomers, which are capable for some pretty good weak signal, moon bounce, DX work, and that sort of thing. There's M-Squared. There's High Gain makes some. Those are really the big three. KLM, I think, still makes antennas in VHF. I know they make HF. There's probably, if you count them, 10 or 12 brands, three to five being major brands that manufacture Yagi antennas.
Well, that sounds like quite a few. Of course, the one that you forgot is the Mike and Tom Tech Tuesday Workshop. Hi. We'll be getting into that this season. So, well, that's pretty neat. You remember from last week, we're going to just say somewhere between the 3-element, 5-element, maybe 7, in that range. What were the ballpark numbers as an average, say from a 3-element to a 7-element? What are these guys costing?
It averages out to where you're about $50 steps from element. The 3-element being the bottom, and they're in the $80 range. And then, you know, for every couple of elements you add, you probably add about $50.
So let's say $180 for about a 7-element. Would that ballpark it? Maybe say $150, $180. So does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's the ballpark. But, you know, I know what you're going to say. We can build them a lot cheaper.
Oh, roger that. You know, and I have to say that of all the elements of building antennas, the Yagi's probably the most scariest to do because just it seems like that. I know a lot of people have got out there and they've tried to build one and it just doesn't work. And there are reasons why they didn't work, and we're going to get into that probably over the next week or two. But It doesn't mean that you can't build them. There's actually some very good instructions if you follow those, or you know, on the internet. You'll probably have a pretty good success rate. You get way up into the microwaves, yeah, that's going to be pretty tough. But 2 meter, you can make some mistakes and it'll still work. But I'd say one of the biggest things is just matching things up and how it's fed onto the antenna. And like we've always said, you can always take the end of the coax, tie it to the antenna, center conductor to one side, ground to the other, it'll work. But it's not going to work that great. We have the matching. And Mike, did all those pretty much come, did you even check into that, or are they pretty much, they are as is with probably what, maybe a typical match for what they have on those as far as how they match it up?
I think typically they're either gamma match or T match. That's generally what I was seeing just by browsing around. Didn't pay that much attention to matching them.
Yeah, that's pretty typical. And the gamma match, what that is, and the T match, for anybody out there who's listening who does not know, that is where the actual driven element itself is actually shorted right onto the boom, just like all the rest of them. And there's this little stub that parallels that. It's held a specific distance away. It's a specific distance long. And a lot of them have a little tuning capacitor on there. If it's just on one side of the antenna, it's a gamma match. If it goes both ways, both sides, it's a T match. They're good. They're not the best, but they're probably a good way to manufacture an antenna and keep it consistent. Myself, I like the Betamatch, which is like a hairpin. And that's we'll get into that later on. But so anyway, Mike, and these come all ready to go, supposedly 50 ohm tuned up, ready to fire out there and bring in all the far out places. Anything else you'd like to add with the manufactured antennas?
Basically, if you can sit down and put one together, they're pretty simple. I've put probably, four of those turkeys together since I've been a ham. As far as VHF Yagis, I've thrown a couple of HF Yagis together, too, in a mini beam. But, yeah, basically, you can sit down and put one together, and, gosh, if you take your time and have coffee and everything, maybe an hour and probably less. And then, basically, they come with everything except the lead-in and the mast, and you're ready to run that rotate. Of course, and you're ready to rock and roll.
Romeo Delta.
Yeah, Roger, this is KF6Q with Tech Tuesday Net. Go ahead, Romeo Delta.
Good evening, one and all in the net. This is Rick in Corona. Kind of reading up on those gamma match and the T match. What's the one that's called that the... It's attached to the driven element, yet it's only, say, like a number, maybe 10-gauge or 12-gauge wire, and it's insulated and through another tube, and then that tube is attached to the driven element. I just wanted to know what that one was called, because I've seen the other ones that were with a direct short, and you move a little bar, up and down, and am I saying it right? NQ7RD.
Okay, Rick, yeah, basically, yeah, there's like a shorting bar that's for tuning. That's the gamma match, and if it's on both sides, of course, it's a T match. And I think the one that you're describing could quite possibly be the beta match. There is a way that it's matched up where there'll be a piece of coax attaching one element to the other. That actually forms a matching balun. The Betamatch itself looks like a big U-shaped piece with the middle of the U shorted to the boom. The two ends of it actually connect to the driven elements, and then one of the driven elements basically is fed through the balun, and the balun, of course, to the other side. I don't know. I'm trying to visualize what you're saying and try to explain the beta. Does that sound close to what you were looking at?
No. If you're familiar with, I think I had the Cushcraft 13B2, and from the SO239 connector, it attached to one of a small bar, which, of course, that had the tuning jumper or shorter or whatever you want to call that you slide up and down that's directly attached to the driven element. And you slide that up and down for tuning. But from the center pin of the SO connector, it attaches straight to that driven element or before the shorting bar. The one I'm referring to is as if you were to take like a Bic pin, slide that into the hollow tube of aluminum, and then stick another wire into the Bic pin, and then that attaches to the center pin of the SO239. That make better sense? Almost like a capacitor, a capacitance. NQ7RD.
Okay, roger that. Yeah, I think that's just a modification of the gamma, real similar to that, but maybe, Mike, you could look that up, see if you could find anything on that. But basically the idea is to, if you use it as a what we call actually an inductive or capacitive coupling to that main driven element, the advantages there are is that the actual driven element itself is shorted to the boom. This is good for keeping any static electricity accumulating on the antenna. It shorts it to ground because usually the boom is grounded. And also, as being the entire antenna is grounded that way, it's a little better protection from lightning. I'm not going to say it's foolproof, but I'll try to look that up, Rick, and get you some fine details. But I know what you're talking about there. Just anyway, well. Let's move on right now with the different elements and how we're going to build one of these puppies for way under $100. That's for sure. Mike, any other information on what Rick has there?
Know exactly what he's talking about, and I'm trying to find it and get the name of that. I can't bring it up in my fast memory bank. Hi. But yeah, we're looking it up on Google now and see if I can come up with that.
FQC.
All right, Steve, hey, go ahead, FQC.
Hey, KE6FQC, station asking about that. Did you say you had the Cushcraft 215 WB?
A negative. Many years ago, I had the 13B2.
Okay, yeah, that's the predecessor probably. It's a T-match. It's just a little metal connector. Part number 125 in your manual.
YNW.
Yeah, YNW. Chris, go ahead.
Yes, when I lived in Arcadia, I decided to make an antenna out of the 93 handbook. So I was directed to tube sales in Los Angeles. And I called them, and they said, we have a $180 minimum. And I said, wow. I was halfway through my order, and he said, well, you've hit your minimum. And in short, I could have bought it for less than I paid for the parts. Then they say, don't just stick the boom, the elements through the boom. Insert them in a stepped plastic. And by this time, a stepped plastic guy, they were at our business reset. Found a place in Texas that could make them, $800 minimum, so that didn't go. I may just get some plastic and carve it. It's a Yagi, but if I just bought it made, I would have saved a lot of trouble. I'm not complaining. It's fun to make it, K6YNW.
Yeah, roger that, Chris. A lot of the savings in making your own antennas is actually getting the parts at a discount, not discounted or surplus. One of the best things for a plastic insert is actually like a plastic bushing. I have spent, I don't know how many hours down there at up here in Big Bear at Riffenberg's. It's got a great supply of little bushings, and I'm sure there's a lot of other suppliers out there have them too. And they have plastic, little plastic bushings. This is one of the best steps. to get you through the boom, and you're talking maybe 10, 20 cents maybe for each part. So a lot of this stuff, too, as far as buying your tubing, you want to go to a metal supplier. There's quite a few around, and, yeah, it's going to cost a couple of dollars. It's going to be way cheaper. Here again, let me reset. Typical, once again, right up here at, this is a lumber yard. They don't specialize in metal supply. This is at Riffenberg's up here in Big Bear. You can pick up, I'm going to say, 3/8 tubing, aluminum tubing, approximately 8 feet long, and it's going to be about $7 or $8. So, yeah, the most expensive part is a square tube boom, but if you stick to some of the round stuff and you go to the right places, you're gonna probably end up okay. If you go to an antenna specialist supplier, you're not necessarily going to get the cheapest price. So it's kind of just, you know, it's always fun to build them, but, you know, when you're looking at maybe $20 for elements, you know, it depends how many elements. So, yeah, you definitely got to pick out the parts, and you got to be a little bit creative there. So I don't know if that helped, Chris, but this is something that Mike and I are going to do up here this spring and summer, and if you can make it up here, it'd be great to have you up.
86BL.
Yeah, Harold, 86BL, go ahead.
Yeah, before you start buying metal from any of these places, the first question you ask when you get hold of the sales desk is, are you a wholesaler for commercial purposes? Because tube sales in L.A., that is their primary business. They don't normally sell to individuals, just, you know, like at your house. I used to pick up and deliver there all the time. And they're always extremely expensive because they have extremely high quality merchandise, but they cater to a select group. And these are people, that, you know, big corporations that don't mind paying the price because they get the courtesy and they get the quality. And for the little bushings, Lowe's has a whole big supply of nylon. I think Home Depot has them over in the fastener section. I got drawers full of stuff. 86BL.
And KF6Q here on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater, Tech Tuesday. Yeah, Harold, that's correct, too. And you can get tubing that's either, there's DOM, drawn over mandrel tubing out there. That's aluminum. That's a little more pricey. So it depends what you're building. And getting back to the two different ways of building the Yagi, of course, you're going to have a boom, whatever it's made out of. You can put your elements through the boom, mount them on top of the boom, surface mount, you know, going over the top or underneath the boom. Does not matter. It's best to keep them on one side or the other side or in the middle. Do them all the same. Biggest issue we have with Yagis over time is they get a little corroded out there. So this is why it's always good, even though they can be shorted. It's even the all the driven element and the directors and the reflector is to have them go through bushings, plastic bushings. And the advantage of that is that they will never be caused any corrosion between the two pieces because they're not touching at all, and they will still work. The calcs are a little bit different, but generally, most of your formulas out there will have that in there. So, Mike, any luck on that antenna? But I do believe Steve answered that as being a T-match.
Actually, it looks like it's a version of a gamma match. Two things that little slider is used for. One, it can be used as a type of capacitor, throw a little capacitance in there. And the other, it can also be used to add length. So there it's a dual purpose type thing. And that's what I'm reading here in the antenna book.
Okay, roger that. Mechanically, putting something like that together gets a little complex. And this is why I prefer the Betamatch myself. and it looks also called a hairpin. It's basically, it's a U-shaped piece out there, and can be tuned also. Real simple. The only I say would be the drawback would be is that it's not, we're not shorting the driven element to the boom. But hey, we're not going to do that anyway, right? Because we don't want that corrosion popping up later on. So we're going to be isolated anyway. So anyway, so we'll get into that in the next few weeks coming up. So anyway, Mike, how about gain? I don't know if you have your notes. What's I know a dipole is gain of zero because it's based on a dipole over isotropic would be, what, 2.2 or something or 2.8. What is a typical three element, 5 and 7? Let's just do 3, 5, and 7.
You would ask me that. My notes have already gone out to the trash. It is 2.15 over isotropic, and that's the gain of a dipole over isotropic. You know what, Tom? Give me a second, and I'll go back and look that up. I just don't remember what it was, but we can do that real quick.
Comment?
Yeah, go ahead, comment.
That was WA6FIZ. I was just going to comment on the corrosion factor up here in Big Bear, because the air is so clear and so clean, we really don't have a big problem with corrosion.
Well, that is true, but and I have to agree with that with you on that one, because I've seen some stuff come down that's been up in the air for a long time, and it's amazing. But as a general sense for building, and since we're reaching out there to people all over Southern California, it's there's another way of actually here's another option too. If you're really handy with brazing, LumaFlux basically is a good way. If you can bore a hole through your beam and put your elements through that, you're not welding with aluminum. You're actually brazing with a LumaFlux rod. And makes a good solid connection. That actually is one of the best and the cheapest and simplest. You have no bushings, and if you have a little slop there while you're putting the element through, it all ties it together. We're going to try to get Steve out there to get Riffenberg to carry that stuff, so maybe more on that later. Anyway, any luck on that, Mike? You're looking that stuff up.
Yeah, let's see. Four element is, Cushcraft is saying 10.2 dB gain. Let's see, 13 element, they're talking 15.8 dB gain. 17 element, they're talking, let's see, 18 dB gain. And let's see, 26 element, 18.5. So that's what I'm reading real quickly here without getting into it a little deeper.
Okay, Roger that. That's ATS, some pretty long antennas out there. So basically, the first one that had the 10 dB gain, was that DBI or just DBD?
Well, I think Cushcraft likes to have it look a little better than what it is, so they're quoting DBI. But I'm going to check that for sure right now.
How many element was that?
It's an Alpha 124WB, and it's a four element. QRX, and I'll get whether that's DBI, but I'm almost sure it is.
Yeah, Roger that. That's way too much gain. And you know, there's that's one thing you got to watch out there. If you're actually going to buy an antenna, the gain that's listed on the package could be DBI, which means it's the isotropic imaginary single perfect antenna in space. Just make sure that you're comparing apples to apples. Make sure if you're looking at this guy's antenna and it's DBI and this one, it's, boy, this is, woo, boy, this is up there. The other guy's got one that say it's 8. It could be the same because he could be DBD. And without getting in that, one is based on the gain over a dipole and the one is based over an imaginary antenna. So, and the dipole itself has, what, 2.15, as Mike stated. You got to make sure you're comparing apples with apples. That's the main thing. Whether you understand the terms or not, make sure that the writing is all the same. And back to you, Mike.
stand corrected. On this four element, they're saying 10.2 dBd. I've got one of those things, and I'm not really sure if that's the way it really is. But that's what they're saying, 10.2 for a four element, 10.2 dBd. I'm going to go to some of the bigger ones and see what they quote on that.
Okay, Roger that. Yeah, that seems a little high, and of course we know manufacturers would never lie about their product or exaggerate, so who knows? Maybe it was a perfect environment testing. Anyway. Well, so back to one of the other topics we're going to talk about tonight while Mike's looking that up. And obviously you can add more elements, you're going to get more gain. If you double the amount of elements out there, you're not going to double the gain, but you're going to add to the gain. But if you take two antennas, let's say you've got two Yagis, and hopefully you're building these because otherwise you'd have you spend a lot of money here, but if you've got two Yagis out there, you've just doubled whatever each one was, if they're identical, you've pretty much doubled that. And I say that with one little side note here. Let me reset. As we know that Yagis are directional, and they have this wave pattern, or I say field of view out there, if you're going to stack antennas sideways or one on top of the other or even four in a quad arrangement, you have to have separation between them so that their eye or their window doesn't overlap, and that's when you're going to get the maximum. Any further separation is not going to change anything. You want to actually to maximize that is to get where the window of, that one sees is not seen part of or directly, you know, in the near space area of the next one. So they'll both see everything out there, but you don't want them overlapping, say, about 5 feet off the antenna or something like that. So, but anyway, Mike, any more information?
YNW.
And KF6Q here on Tech Tuesday in the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club 4ID. Yes, go ahead, Chris.
Yes, if you have a 10-element beam, you add another 10 elements, you gain 3 dB, it becomes, just very difficult. And that's partly why I think they have separate arrays. And also a separate array has a little wider angle. You get a 20-element beam, if there is such. It's a very narrow and good when you're on the mark, but hard to get on the mark. K6YW.
Yeah, roger that. And you know, one other thing there, Chris, when you get out there, I mean, to me, I think a 7-element is great, maybe a little bit more. When you start getting up there in the teens and 20s of element count, you've got one other critical thing to think about. You've got an incredible wind load out there. So depending on where you live and what kind of winds you get, the mast may stay up, the tower may stay up, the wind may rip the antenna apart, you know. So a shorter antenna, less wind load, less stress. You got to remember, okay, this is a Yagi. It's going to be pointed someplace. We're going to use a rotator, whatever, to spin this thing around. And the more you get out there for leverage and torque, the more it's going to want to rip that rotator apart also. So a lot of things to think about when you start jumping up with bigger elements. Wind load, tower load, and ripping your rotator apart or cutting it loose. And I think, Mick, did you have an issue? Was that with your – no, that was with your winch. Sorry, never mind. Different motor. But anyway, Mike, any real quick, back to you.
So far, I'm finding everything they're referring to DBD, and that I've done the 13, I've done the 17 element. 17 element, they say, is 18 dBd gain over
or dipole. So interesting. I'm going to go to one of their stacked arrays now and see what they say on that.
Okay, Roger that. Yeah, essentially, this is where if you're going to be doing EME or you're looking at, say, an array of, say, 8, 4, or 8, or even who knows, possibly more of stacked horizontally and vertically for doing moon bounce, you know, you really don't want them sticking out there too long. But I have seen pictures of huge arrays, just massive amount of material in the boom itself. So obviously every time you start adding stuff like that to physically support itself, you're talking huge dollars, and this is making this stuff yourself. If you had to buy this stuff, obviously going to be a huge expense. But anyway, yeah, yeah, just not to be disappointed on where you buy stuff, but like Harold says, you got to be careful. There are certain products out there, very, very refined, elite, special, whatever. Try to find something that's workable. I don't know if anybody's ever looked at a good TV antenna. That's probably the cheapest rolled tubing that I've ever seen in my life. Back to you, Mike, KF6Q.
But in my youth, I've used those to make antennas with. you use what you've got. Well, I'm looking at a 26-element array here, and they're talking, it's 213 side-by-side. I suppose you could put them, stack them vertically, too. They're talking 18.8 dB gain on that particular array.
Okay, gain of 18, and that was two of them with how many elements each?
213, that's a total of 26 elements.
Okay, Roger that. So, and they had a single antenna with 17 elements that also had 18. So that, as one, had 18 dB gain, I think you just quoted, or I'm quoting you. But now here we've got almost a total of 26 elements for the same. So obviously they're, whatever they're set up there, they're overlapping windows or something there. They're not really getting a true, you know, efficiency or whatever you would call it. Back to you, Mike.
Yeah, Roger that. Well, and Cushcraft is not what I would call a high-end antenna. Their boomers are nice. They make nice antennas. You can walk into HRO and get just about anything they make. So, I mean, they're readily available. I've used the Cushcraft four elements up to about, I think I had a seven element at one time for quite a while. And they work. They function. But there are better quality antennas, you know, that do basically the same thing and maybe have more of a realistic gain if you're actually calculating for path loss on EMA or weak signal work on 2 meter sideband.
Okay, Roger that. Yeah, I what I would like to do is, we didn't get a chance to do this last year as the weather really took us in, and we were lucky even to get a quad built, and we'll do some more with that this year. But I'd like to take right out of the amateur radio handbook or antenna handbook, just something that's possibly in both, and something real simple, not something for, you know, a single sideband or satellite or anything like that, but just build a 2 meter, say under 10 element Yagi, and do some testing. Maybe build two. Build one that's about 7 elements, and then a 10 element, and compare those, and you've got some good flat terrain over there. Try to do some comparison off of a beacon or somebody else out there, or maybe we can just do a field test and see what we find out, because it's, the proof is in the pudding. I don't care what they claim or what they say they'll do or what they're supposed to do, if everything is in a perfect world, but we're not in a perfect world. So it's always interesting, and then we'll see what we, and keep an accurate cost of what it costs to build these. So what do you think? You want to do it?
You know, as soon as the weather clears up, I'm ready, willing, and able, and Cindy's ready to cook some grub anytime. So, yeah, we're ready to rock and roll on that. And I did talk to Bob, WA6MQF, a little bit, and he has some pretty neat antenna analyzers that he may be able to bring with him if we give him enough notice.
Okay, roger that. Yeah, I did. The one of the gentlemen down the hill that's actually helping me, or it did help me. Actually, we got everything moved out of that house, and was helping me move. This is what he does for. He does this for a living. He's a welder. He's a precision welder, and everything's TIG. And through their shop, he had talked to a few people for me, and they said the best thing for us, if we want to, you know, weld aluminum, is to get that Alumiflux. He said that's the easiest and best way to go if we want to go that route. Now, obviously, you know, he's looking for us right now to find a good source of it. And if we need to, we'll bring him up on the hill. This guy can weld literally the head on a pin, and I'm not lying. Anyway, so, Mike, other than that, I think we've covered quite a bit there, and we're going to get more into some of the matching and statistics. I'll do some research this next coming week. I'll do some research on finding some suppliers who have what. What do they have, and how much does it cost? Because that's one thing. Aluminum is up and down like a yo-yo. So, but does anybody out there have any more comments or questions? Please come back.
CD6PO.
FIZ.
YNW.
All right, let's take them in order first. AD6PL, Harold first, and then Mick, and then Chris.
Yeah, I believe that when you calculate your gain for a stack set or quad box set, rather than counting the elements in the set, you get the gain off of one antenna. All of them have to be matched, or should be. And then you just add, like for two, you would multiply by two. And then you get a bonus gain out of the stacking. So I forget what it is, but you can end up with a box, you can end up with a really good gain. You'll be able to talk to the guy on the other side of the moon, 86 PL.
Yeah, roger that, Harold. Yeah, it's... We got a couple people actually looking at that. Yeah, Mick, WA6FIZ, go ahead, Mick.
Okay, a couple of things. One is the law of diminishing returns, and that is the more elements you put out, the less gain you get per element, and the more it costs. So at some point, it depends on how much you're willing to spend. The other thing is... back last summer when we were talking about TV, we were talking about using wood for a boom. And I took some 2x4s and ripped them so I had, I don't remember what they were, but and I held out 8 feet of it and it didn't bend. So that looked pretty good. And we also talked about using... a copper wire, and of course if you stretch the copper wire it anneals it, and as long as you don't have anything actually touching it or getting in the way of it, it will support it, you know, the 18 inches sticking out. And the other thing of course is that all you need is a drop of solder next to the boom to keep the elements from sliding in and out. So anyhow, that's the law of diminishing returns and the wooden boom Yagi.
Oh, roger that. Yeah, and then, besides the wooden boom, there's a lot out there with fiberglass and plastics. Wood has probably got to be the best way, the cheapest way to go, and works fine. And diminishing returns, yes. I think there's a reason we don't see any 50-element antennas out there, to say the least. But you do see quite a few, I'd say up to about 10 elements, sometimes more, stacked arrays, whereas each antenna individually is still, in that ballpark where it's economically feasible, and then putting them in array. But then still with the array, you have a huge superstructure to move that thing. So, yeah, it's all relative to that. But thanks, Mick. Appreciate that. Yeah, I remember giving you a piece of copper wire, doggone it. We got to get that going again. So, alrighty, Chris, back to you.
Okay, two things. When you test two antennas, you have to put them on the same boom and about the same height. Other things being equal. I don't know if any of you knew Don W6EEN in the valley here. He had about five elements on 80 meters. I think he had about seven on 40 meters, 20 acres. And I hadn't been over there in a long time. So when I started teaching in Desert Sands, I went by the place and the development was just tremendous around it. Couldn't even see the lot. The antenna stuck up well. And so I called Don, reset. I said, Don, I can't believe the development in that area. And he said, yeah, Chris, something else. He said, Chris, I'm not feeling well. So I just wanted to let you know I'm not feeling well and I may not last. And he died about half a year later. He donated his antennas to the Northern DX Club. So they're gone now. And I know people who helped put them up. K6YNW.
Okay, Chris, yeah, seven elements on 40 meters, that had to be huge. That's quite a feat in itself. So sorry to hear that he passed away, and good to see that all that stuff went out there to good use, and it's passed on down to somebody who's using it. So, all right, fantastic. Anybody else out there, any comments or questions, please come back to KF6Q.
LAN.
The Boulder Man, Bill, KD6LN, go ahead.
I have a theoretical question, or hypothetical, or hypochondrical, or something. Anyway, if you were to take a four-element beam, and I'm just going to use round figures to make it easy, let's say distance was 4 foot square diameter, and you wanted to make it a more than one band, could you theoretically, or could you take and put within that 4 foot diameter, put a 2 foot diameter on the same line with the 4 foot and make it work on a different band? You may probably have to run a separate coax up or run a switch so that you hit one element or one size for one band and one size for the other band. Would that work?
Yeah, I could probably toss this up in the air and there'd be a few people out there would catch it. Yeah, that's actually what I believe you're trying to describe there would be a multi-band Yagi. Tri-bander is another name for one that's on three bands. And the different elements, it's actually like two antennas or three antennas merged into one. And there's, of course, elements for all three bands. Now, as far as the way it's fed, I don't have a tri-bander, so I know that you can feed dipoles that way, and the proper signal will go to the proper antenna. If you're going to run all three at the same time, that was done last field day with some great diplexers, and they actually separated the bands apart. But if you're going to just use it for, you want one antenna for you, you're only going to use one band at a time. And we'll just say a three-bander, a tri-bander, very common. Not cheap, but very common. Mick, you want to expand on that? Or Mike? I'll give it to Mick first.
Okay, probably the most interesting one that I have seen is the one they use for satellite communications. but has both the 2-meter and 440 elements on the same boom. And they're fed into one coax, fed into one radio that has both 2-meter and 440 capability. Does that sound familiar?
If you're addressing that to me, yes, I have one. And actually, they see it in there in the handle. They hide it in the handle. See, they're sneaky. You don't know they're doing this. There is actually a diplexer in the handle. So that does. They do actually separate the two bands there. It's real simple circuitry, and all it is a filter, a high pass and a low pass. But, yeah, that's one way, and they're spun like that. And then quite often, too, you'll see them on the HF bands, you know, huge arrays. I actually do own one. I think, Mike, didn't you give me one? It's still in pieces, but I think it was a multi-bander, tri-bander. It's still in a pile, though. Back to you real quick, Mike.
WB6CLZ. Yeah, I think there's some parts for one. Well, if you go to my QRZ page, look it up. I've got an MA5 mini beam. It's made by Cushcraft, and it's good for, it's HF, but it's good for 10, 12, 15, 17, and 20 meters. It is a trap type beam, and it's only fed with one coax. Works quite well. Adjustment's kind of squirrely. I mean, you have to be right on for the area of the band that you're working with. But that's basically what they do on that type of a beam.
You send it back to Bill, LAN. Any other comments?
No, that's fine. I just wanted to know if that was not only possible, but feasible, practical, and all those other old. Got an idea that on something I may want to try. Thanks for the info, KD6LAN.
Okay, Roger that. You know, one thing, too, might point out there, Bill, we're talking about Yagis, but quads, the quad reminds me of a box kite. I don't know why, but but a quad antenna quite often will have loops inside the loops. Very typical there of having multiple quads with multiple different bands there, too. It's always good, and I would say that using a tri-bander or any antenna that is capable of extra bands, like Mike says, it's a little squirrely to try to tune it up, if not plain downright really difficult. But it's like we've always said. You have to work within your means. You may not have all the space. You may only have enough space for one antenna, or you only want one antenna up on your roof, if that. Or possibly there's restrictions that limit you to that. And in the perfect world, with enough space, you would want to have a different antenna for every different band you're going to work on. But, you know, that gets to be very pricey. You've got different towers. You've got a whole bunch of stuff. So anyway, that's a whole nother topic. That's a whole nother Tech Tuesday. But anyway, anybody else out there, any questions or comments on all that?
WA6FIZ.
Mick, go ahead.
Okay, this has nothing to do with antennas, but I do have a project going on. I have to get down inside the guts of a radio with the soldering iron. And there isn't enough room. Anybody have any ideas about how you can extend your soldering iron so you can get in there? And it doesn't have to be real hot. It's just a matter of tacking a wire onto a tube socket. So any ideas how you can extend the length of your soldering iron? WA6FIZ.
With info.
Yeah, go ahead. My quick comment before I hand it over to Mike would be simply to attach copper to it, whether it be tubing, quarter-inch tubing, possibly on your soldering iron, and just it's just going to take longer to heat the thing up. Might need a more powerful soldering iron, something skinny enough to get in there, but that's my 2 cents worth. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, Mickey. Yeah, I'm looking at my, 1960 Hints and Kinks, and I'm seeing if I can find it in here. But basically what they did is just basically what Tom said, wrap a couple, three or four coils of copper wire around the heated tip of the soldering iron and just kind of extend that down. And I think you could probably get 3 or 4 inches off that. And depending on what it is, get enough to probably take care of that. I'm looking now, but I've seen it before somewhere. Basically, they just wrap it around the tip and extend it straight out, and it conducts enough to where you can solder with it. How's that sound?
Okay, that was one of the things I considered. The other thing I considered was using my soldering pistol, whatever you call that thing, or that uses a transformer to heat it up, and make a tip out of a piece of number 12 copper wire that's longer. I think all the heat's right on the tip. What do you think there, Mike?
I got it, Tom.
Yeah, go ahead there, Mike. Myself, I think the whole copper is going to probably all reach the same temperature. If it's all 12 gauge, it would all be the same temperature. But go ahead, Mike.
I've made tips out of number 12. I think it was number 12, maybe number 10, for those soldering pistols. And yeah, it does work. Just flatten it out pretty good. And you should be able to make that work. I haven't found that in my Hints and Kinks yet, though. Back to you, Tom. KS6Q, WB6CLZ.
KS6Q here with the Tech Tuesday group. Well, what do you think, Mick? I think there's a couple of good suggestions, but I think that would work. Back to you, Mick.
Okie doke. Well, we'll give both of those a try and see what we can do. It's in between some parts that I don't want to destroy. There's a couple of coils, and there's not very much room between it. Also, wood, I guess, would work. Some thin pieces of wood I could put in there, and even if the soldering iron touched it, you know, it wouldn't burn. At least it wouldn't burn the coil that's next to it.
Yeah, roger that. Well, way back in the day, and I'm talking about back in the 60s, used to have these little asbestos mats you could kind of sweep down in there, but I think they're going to be pretty hard to find now. So, well, anyway, that sounds good. Sounds like you got something going there. Anybody else out there before we close down Tech Tuesday? Any other questions, suggestions, or comments? Please come back. Alrighty. Well, sounds like we've talked it up enough tonight and got a lot of neat things going there with the Augies, and we'll keep expanding on that, possibly all the good, the bad, and the ugly of the Gamma, the Beta, the T-Match, and there was another very oddball match out there. I'll have to look it up. Got an email from, my gosh, quite a while back from KJ6KDL. Not real commonly used, but another matching system out there. Anyway, QST, 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 this is KF6Q. Tom here with Tech Tuesday and the group. Glad for everybody to participate this evening. Hopefully everybody out there picked up a little bit of this and that. And we always appreciate all the participation, even if all you're doing is listening in. So I'll take care. Please join us again next Tuesday at 1900 hours. And for anybody out there with the testing, we'll try to get an update out announced on this repeater by Thursday, probably on the CertNet announcement. So thanks again. This is KF6Q, and we'll be clear and standing by.